Welcome to the Standby with JJ and Francisco. That's my the music right there.
That's a lovely DJ. That's your DJ voice, right?
That's my my DJ is like, welcome to Standby with JJ and Francisco.
All right, sounded the same for me.
Yeah.
I still thought it was great, though. I thought, you know, that was magic.
So I want to text you something. I mean, I was talking, you know, I was talking to this person who's an older person, and you know how older people sometimes they always go like, back in the day, things were so much better. And I was like, well, I was like, but for who? Like, I mean, like, I don't think like minorities are going like, hey, man, back in the 50s. Yeah. Those were the good times.
Yeah, it really depends on what people are talking about.
Rise, I mean, your point of view. Like, I mean, who is
because even if it's not a social issue, even if it's not a social issue, if it's something like computers, though, they're better now. I'm very sure that you're not waiting for things to buffer.
Like women are not going like, yeah, back in the 50s, I miss belonging in the kitchen. Like, no. which is why I think, like, I was like, I love Back to the Future, but Back to the Future would not work if Marty McFly was a minority. If Marty McFly was Latino or Black, like, it would be short. You know what I mean?
Right.
It'd be like, hey, it's like, Doug, it's like, Marty, you got to go to 1955. Like, you know what, Doug? I'm good in 85, man.
Let's go to the future. See how that works out. I love what you were saying about the. I love how you went. I long for those days when we were just expected to be in the kitchen, because I can see a very funny woman like saying that. I'm like, oh, the right to vote and all these women rights. Oh, what a hassle! Please, please take them away. I long for the simpler times.
Wait. I love getting 1/10 of what a man gets paid. Even to this day, I still don't get paid the same. But hey, back in the day, I even got paid less, and I miss those days.
Yeah, it really does depend on who says it, doesn't it? You have to be careful as a white guy. In my position, I have to be careful, because even if it's overheard, even if I say back in the day, even if I'm talking about something innocuous, like, you know, like back in the day when you would get on the London Underground, you had to have a paper ticket. But as soon as you start saying back in the day, that perks eyes up. What's the white guy?
Because it's even, it could be the white guy, it could be a man saying back in the day, like back in the day was so much better. You know, like, you have to be careful. Yeah. You can't, it's like, it's like back in the day, it's always back in the day, always only works for when you were on top, you know, but like back in the day, never works for like equality. Like, if the whole world history started with everybody being equal at the same time, then everybody could say back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it didn't start like that.
Yeah. No, we're progressing. Humanity is definitely progressing on social issues. So yeah, if you're going to be talking about social issues, there's no way you can go back in the day, but other things you can. Like, I'll say right now, like back in the day, food was a little bit better. There was a lot less GMO type food.
Okay.
So sometimes back in the day, there was some foods that tasted better than the process that they put them through.
True,
these days.
True.
But it's
a couple of things. I mean, because even health, you can be like, back in the day, man, health was so much. Now you would die because you had smallpox. You know. It's kind of like, there's a lot of things that are, I think it is because people like, it's because of the fact that, you were comfortable that time, you know. I think the only thing you can say back in the days when, like, back in the day when I was young, life was so much better because I was young and I could do anything and I wasn't getting sick or I wasn't getting hurt.
Yeah.
But besides that, I mean, it's hard to.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, if back in the day, transportation was not better. I mean, it would take you like.
No.
You know, 2 weeks to fucking go to Europe, you know, and now it takes you like 5 hours, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So everything's on a scale. Why did somebody say this to you? Did somebody actually
back in the day? No, but you know, you always, when you get into conversations with like older people, you know, they always, they always, I mean, and even like people in Venezuela too, I'm not talking about like people here, like just like older people, it's like, ah, back in my time, it's like, yeah, but for who? Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. For you it was better, but for a lot of other people it wasn't. So it's
yeah, like, you've got rose tinted glasses, sir, that you're wearing.
That's
Yeah. Back in my day.
Oh, that's the word. Back in my day. That's even more obnoxious, I think.
Yeah, I can't even think of much else that I liked more, but I remember, I think some fruits tasted better before this whole fucking whatever we got going on now. But other than that, I'm an adult and I can cook. Yeah, so.
I could see how, you know, like food, like, but it's also because, again, I mean, they were, I guess, more fresh or something. Yeah, I think it's the processed food is like bad, obviously, but like the more like natural stuff you can get. But also that was because there wasn't any, you know, there was like farmers and stuff, and that was, you had to like make your own food. So, but yeah.
Yeah, we got cornstarch, corn syrup, or whatever in everything now.
But
back in the day.
Well, back in the day, they had actual, like, cigarettes were prescribed by doctors.
Yes, back in the day, cigarettes were healthy for you in the day. Yeah. I think, didn't they used to advertise that it would help you with your digestion? Feeling backed up, have one of these. So
Coke actually had cocaine in it.
Yeah, so you know what? There was some good things. There are some things were better, but yeah, definitely not on the social issues. It's important to clarify that with some people.
Yeah.
I mean everything except for social issues.
Yeah. But again, it's like a few things because it's a lot of things that are much better today.
Yeah. Oh yeah, tons. Definitely. There's no friggin' contest. Is there?
No.
You know, so.
Not at all. But today, in the day, we have a new, we have a guest today. We had a great interview with Fabricio Copado, who's a Chilean born comedian, very popular in Chile, who now resides in LA. And me and him have become very good friends, you know, and we had the pleasure to interview him, and it was great.
Yeah, I was excited to do this because I did you guys had a podcast going was it during the pandemic or was it before
during the pandemic? It was a show that we did in the improv that is gonna come. I mean, we're in the talks of redoing it again, so you most likely will tell you again to do it.
Yeah, that was good fun.
Yeah.
That was a good time. So yeah, and it's great to it's great to get to know him even more, you know, over, you know, to have a conversation. Because, of course, your guys' podcast game show was
structure. Yeah,
it was action. Yeah. And so now I feel like I've learned a lot about him. I was really looking forward to it. It was an absolutely fantastic interview, I would say.
Yeah, I think we learned a lot about traveling, about moving. He liked to move mentally.
yeah, that was really fun too. Like for our first question, ladies and gentlemen at home, you guys all know what to expect, but the way it was interpreted was unique. But you know, that's what happens when we're going across cultures and across language barriers here. So
it was cool to see how and also from him, because I think he's one of the first comics that we had where his moves were kind of like not to become more popular or bigger in their career, but like less, right?
Yeah, that's interesting too. Yeah, because he was famous early on in his career, so he was able to make decisions to expand his comedic horizons instead of just to capitalize on his fame. And I found that really interesting as well. What a fun interview, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So let's go into it, because back in my day, interviews.
Back in the day, the two hosts didn't have to throw to the interview. It just happened. It just happened naturally. And now these kids throwing it to the interview. Here you go, everybody. Fabricio Capano.
Váyalo.
Hello.
Well, Welcome to Stand By with JJ and Francisco. We are live.
Here's the man. We've got Fabrizio Capano with us.
Woo! How you doing? Fabrizio. How are you, Fabrizio?
I'm great. I'm happy to be here with you guys. I'm going to put my full name here. I think just let me do this right now. Fabrizio Capano.
Got
it. Choose like the sweet followers.
Yeah. Fabrizio, so Fabrizio, like, just want to introduce you to the crowd. Fabrizio's from Chile. He's a good friend of mine, and he's like the king of comedy in Chile.
Wow, you know? The king of comedy in a country that no one cares.
How are they with comedy in Chile? Are they still like, where's the evolution?
He started. That's what I wanted to talk about. He started, like, he's one of the pioneers of starting stand up comedy in Chile, you know.
Yeah, we were at the Stone Age of comedy, and now we are the Silver Era, maybe. Yeah, no, I started, like, I don't know, 15 years ago now, or maybe more. And when we started, yeah, there was nothing. And now there's a bunch of clubs. There's a couple of, like, legit comedy clubs. And I think there's like at least 100 good comics. And that's a lot for a small country.
Yeah, that's good. That's a quick expansion, really. So when there was nobody and you were part of this initial, this initial artist to bring this art form to these people, what was it like getting on? Were they like looking at going, what the heck is this? This isn't America. Get out of here with your words.
No, people were more like, what kind of religious show is it? Like, I don't get it. Like, what kind of priest is this? And it was fun because of course there was no venues or anything, like, you know, with like the right setting. So we were just doing comedy everywhere. So that's why I always been good to, like, do shitty shows, you know, because I was raised in an environment when you do a show in, like, I mean, in the middle of nowhere with four chairs or, like, I don't know. We were like COVID, pre-COVID. So
I have the same experience like that. Yeah, because I started the comedy store when the comedy store was not popular. So it was pretty much like that. It was like just like, you know, 10 people spread out in the room, you know, and that was a lot, you know. So
does the store just go through ebbs and flows, though? I've only been here for like 5 years. Yeah. But it comes and goes, doesn't it?
I mean, I think it's like any club, any nightclub or anything that, or any, you know, restaurant, you know, stuff like that. It goes, it becomes popular. It goes, you know, goes in and out, you know. So when I started, it was a little, it was even better than before, I guess, like 5 years before I started, or 10, it was like really, really bad.
I think it's hard for us to think about it, but like comedy used to be a bad thing. Like being a comedian used to be like, no one cares about those people.
Like in the early, like late 90s or 2000s.
It after the boom, was it? It was after Swingers, post-Swingers, and then post every, because they always said every comedian got offered a sitcom in the 90s.
Yeah, and they all went to like get some good money and stop being funny. And there was like this empty void in space and time. And that's it's funny because in my mind, like, because if I was in Chile, I was like, oh, I'm sure this at this point on time, the comedy store must be the coolest place on earth. But it wasn't, you know?
Well, yeah, that's something with LA. When you come here, like, people come to Hollywood and they're like, oh, man, I want to go to Hollywood. And then you take it to Hollywood Boulevard and they're like, oh shit.
Yeah. Hold on to your valuables, kids. We're gonna make our way across these stars as quickly. Take a picture quickly.
So, well, these people are actors. Like, they look like homeless people, but like maybe they are famous somewhere. That's like how I felt every time I walk, like, in the Walk of Fame. It's like, are these people famous anymore? You know?
Yeah, I wasn't ready to see Superman with a bum bag. You know,
You know what? Fun fact: when I used to live like in an apartment, and Superman from Hollywood Boulevard was like my neighbor, like my, in front. He lived in the opposite like building, and I would see him in the morning just come out like full dress to take the bus or something. I'm thinking, going like, look, if you gotta do it, fine. You look, work is work, but why are you going full dress? Like, I would just go.
Yeah,
like, at least,
well, there was no phone booths. There was no phone booths anymore. You know, that's the place where Superman changed his clothes.
But that is true, also, like, because also he's like, it is Superman. So like you have to show your face. It's not like if I'm Spider-Man or I would be the one mask with a mask on. I mean, yeah.
I still
you are, and we don't know.
Yeah, maybe I'm still the Spider-Man.
I still marvel at Superman's move, the one, because he does. So he's got a bum bag, you know, or a fanny pack, I guess, in other cultures. Yeah, everybody knows what I'm talking about, bum bags, fanny packs. And he does a thing where when he poses for pictures with people, he sweeps the cape up so the cape starts to drift. And then with the other hand, he quickly swings the bum bag out of the way around his back. And then he's ready for the photo. And I was just watching this going, oh my God, this is the state of Superman these days.
There's a Netflix documentary about those guys.
It's interesting. Oh, yeah?
Because like that guy, that Superman guy, it's like that's like he embraced that as like that's his job. You know, he was doing it for like 20 years, you know.
And you have to see the Snyder cut of that documentary. it's 6 hours, and every time he moved the fanny pack, it's in slow mo. Really epic.
Because they show in the Snyder cut, they show him taking breaks, you know, like going to Subway.
That's why it's so long.
But it's so long, you know, it's like every shitty moment of his life is in like, you know, with that epic music.
Well, I think we should start. I mean, we just want to let you know what the podcast is about. We talk about traveling and the arts, and you know, like since we're obviously we're comics, we have to travel a lot. So, a lot of the questions that we're gonna ask you are just related to traveling and stuff like that. But obviously, we can talk about everything. So, you can answer the question and then go back to talking about Superman and his Snyder
class. Cool.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm ready. I feel ready.
Yeah, well, you're in charge of the big interference because you guys work together a fair bit, haven't you?
Yeah. No, we met, I think with me and Fabrizio, we met through this Mass Mejor, which is like an SNL Broadway company that they basically build. They're trying to collect or have a collection of talent, Latino talent. And that's how me and Fabrizio met. And but yeah, the cool thing is that when we met, we were like, I was like, I didn't know, like, you know, then I started noticing that he was like, he's like so big in Chile. One of the first ones that also did the big festival called Viña del Mar, which is the biggest festival in his country and also in Latin and throughout South America. And like he did, which was like, if for people who don't know, it's basically like a live concert that, you know, most musicians would do it, but I think stand-up started doing it because it started getting popular. But it's live, and then people vote on the performance. Like you have to win like a
but
it's even worse. Like voting sounds like more civilized than this. People just boo someone that they hate till they throw you out of stage.
Okay,
it's
wait.
Knights of the Apollo.
So it's a gong show. Basically,
yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's kind of like the gong show and at the same time the Super Bowl, because the whole country's watching you.
Oh God!
It's like the highest ratings of the year, and it's like massive festival. And everyone that fail after that is like forever, like tinted with this failure.
Oh no, they carry a stigma of failure with them through the rest of their career.
Yeah, yeah.
Having a go at a gong show style gig.
It's a nightmare.
Ouch,
it's a nightmare.
That sounds tough. That's a lot on the line.
It's a big festival. Yeah, but it was fun. I mean, it did it in 2017. And and the thing is, like, that what Francisco was saying, like, then if they like you, they like cheer for you and they give you, on stage, it's like, oh, now you have an award. And they give you a golden seagull.
Okay. All right. Okay.
And they give you like a platinum seagull, and if you do really well, they give you the golden seagull.
Why and a seagull? Is there a reference?
It's like a beach town.
It's funny.
There's a lot of
beach.
Seagull.
It's funny because that's like my joke. It sounded like you said like it's a beach town.
Yeah, I was like,
it's a beach.
I'm saying right, it's a beach town.
How do seagulls refer to bitches? Oh, well now I understand.
In Chile, you call a bitch a seagull.
We got bitches everywhere.
No, it's a
both.
Beach. It's like
it's
close to the beach.
Town and a beach town.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
right.
The beaches.
Okay.
But yeah, that's, so were you scared? Like, were you scared to do it? Like, were you like, fuck? Or like, did you like, oh, I got this? You know, were you like nervous? Like, obviously we all get nervous to do any show, but like, were you like, oh, this could be the end of my career here?
I was nervous the days before, but not that night. That night I was very, I mean, because it was like a material that I was doing for, I mean, different pieces of material for like 10 years.
So
it was
like, okay.
I've been doing this for a good amount of time, I feel very comfortable. And then before that show, I did a tour that every night
you would
I
do the same
show
set.
In a different venues, big venues, small venues, for 10 people, 1,000.
Yeah.
So when I got there, I was like feeling really comfortable with the material. But that's the only way to do it, I think.
Because of course.
I blocked my social media. I didn't have Twitter and Facebook, anything at the time.
Before or during?
During the thing. Since they announced my name till I got on stage, I didn't check my phone once.
Yeah, of course.
The way to do it.
Yeah, no, I think that's the only way. I mean, that's like preparing for a special. I mean, you have to do it that is so like, that it's like, because it has to be so ingrained in you that even if you forget about it, or even if you, like, it's just automatic. You know what I mean? Like, you can, like, even, like,
one is there.
Yeah. It's like, you don't think about it, you just do it. But,
In fact, I'd actually feel really lucky if I had a pressure gig like that coming up. But luckily enough, I was on the road honing the material till the night before. You couldn't ask for more, could you? Because you'd hate to be sitting around with a lot of free time waiting to perform.
Oh yeah, no, that's the worst. The worst feeling is like, I need to try these jokes before I tape them.
Yeah. And then you said that you try like stuff that you've done for like 10 years. Like, did you?
I mean, things like it was 3 years ago, a year, a month. But like the whole thing. Yeah, I have jokes for a long time that I was like, okay, I have this thing that is coming, and I know that it works.
Yeah, that's
great.
Different
audiences.
But because you have a fan base over there, were you like, I don't want to do that because everybody knows that because I do that joke, you know, were you scared about that?
I mean, I was concerned about that a little bit, but then my other side of my brain was like, I can't fail in this. I mean,
you got to go with what you got, you know?
And it's a different, it's a different level of an audience because of course I had like have followers and I have a lot of people that knew me, but at the time this is like a breaking into like a real mass, like this is the place that like mothers and fathers and uncles and like people you never reach, they will see you for the first time. So I was always also like thinking a lot of like, okay, I need to do this in a way that is like kind of presenting myself to a new audience without thinking that the other audience knew me already.
Yeah, and that's a hard thing to think about, like hitting that cross section of everybody so that every generation who has been watching you on the internet is nodding at each other going, yeah, we like this guy.
That's the weirdest thing about those kind of shows, and it's hard to think about that here in America. It's like we don't have like niche comedy, or we have a little bit, and if you have it, it's so small that you don't make money out of it. So you need to anyway, you need to figure out like ways to have a bigger chunk of audience if you want to make something, but at the same time you want to do your own thing, you know, you don't want to like tell jokes that you don't care, but you have to do that kind of like mix
here's so big that you can have a niche audience and have a successful career and
forever and filled
theaters, you know, with like, and like bands do it all the time, you know, like
so
I think that's and I think in smaller countries it's hard. It's like you do have to like, hey, I have to do good in for the whole country because it's a smaller population. By the way, Hallowell is saying hi to Fabrizio.
Hey, oh,
hello.
Shy, but
who is this? Hi. Hallowell.
She's giving you a wave. Hello, Hallowell. How you doing? Well, I mean, Francisco, do you want to do the? Well, actually, you've already explained it to him, right?
The questions? Yeah. So we're gonna ask you questions about travels and the arts, and then JJ's gonna go with the first questions to you.
Yeah,
and we can talk about it.
I guess the first question lies to me. It's just straightforward and fun. But here's question number one for you, Fabrizio. What was the first big move that you made for the sake of your comedy career in your life? When did you have to make a decision to go, all right, I'm changing?
I think was when I started doing TV, because at the beginning, for example, it's a weird thing because I started in a TV show that it was called The Comedy Club. And when we started this TV show, we were in cable. So it was a small audience.
Cable in Chile.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And in a couple of countries in Latin America. But then we were called to do it on a, you know, like a open air station, a, you know, broadcast.
Like an NBC, ABC here, for example.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So they called from there and it was like, okay, now I need to take some decisions. So I was, at the time, I was a huge fan of Weezer. And I was reading about how River Cuomo is like study every song in the top 100. And he like learn a lot about how music is written and like pop music works. And like he put like he's a lot of work in that direction to keep the band going. So I was like, okay, I need to learn how to speak with a bigger audience. And like, I have to take decisions about like what I wear or how I, you know, how I present my jokes. So I think the biggest decision was like, now I can't just think about myself, you know, I have to do things that maybe I'm not 100% sure, but like experiment with a bigger audience. So for example, it was simple things. It was super simple things, but at the time, this is like 2008, talking about Twitter, it was a niche thing, you know, especially over there. Yeah. It was like for a group of people. So I had jokes about, you know, Twitter, but I had to like do a little introduction of what it is for that other audience, you know?
Right.
So every time I was writing a joke, I was like, okay, now I have to think about my mom. And I have to add a line or two. Could be a simple explanation, but just adding something to be like, oh, that this thing that you can only write this amount of words and just put it in like a block for a lot of people. You know, it was not the best for my comedy. You know, it was like changing the rhythm. But at the same time, I was like opening the door for other people. And I think that was like the first time I thought about, oh, I need to change something for my voice on stage.
Oh, so but did this prompt of like a move? I as in like a residency. Like, were you living when you went from?
Okay, he's physically.
I understand the language barrier now, but this move. I will take the blame because obviously the word move can.
No, but you're right. This podcast is about traveling.
I like the name that because you went mistake. Avant-garde. You went over. You're like, you said move about personality.
I was transcending. Yeah, yeah. I was transcending.
You were coming from the soul, and I love coming from the soul, but you're like, here's the move I did. I decided to approach Twitter differently.
I love that.
I made that move. And I'm like, oh well. Okay.
Plus, I love that JJ was like, it was like, mm-hmm. But did you move to
physically?
This farther? Did you have to take the bus to the cable from
yeah. How hard was it to get on Twitter?
Well, at the time there was one Twitter account for the whole country. You have to take a bus going to that computer.
Yeah, so I moved. I moved closer to the router. So I can get the signal first.
I think now answering the question, I started doing shows in Argentina. That was my first big.
So did you move there?
this have to be specifically about moving to the country or just going to the other country?
I think we have another question about like going.
Okay,
like...
I moved to Mexico.
Okay, fine.
Okay. No. I went to Mexico 5 years ago, maybe six. Are you happy now? I moved.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Finally, you had a residency. Yeah.
That's fantastic. So wait a minute. When did this happen? This was because I'm dying to know. Was this earlier in your career, or was it at a point in your career where you're like, I have to move to Mexico out of necessity to get closer to the mass market of America?
No, it was more like escaping from my market. It was.
Right.
I was like, I need to do something different, get out of my house and like just go somewhere far to just, you know.
So that was a big move.
I was
move.
Tired of like what I was doing. That was what you call a big move.
No, because most people like, I mean, we interview other comics and a lot of them, they go like, they moved like to New York or because they needed to.
They understand the the question right away.
Yeah, but English is all of their first language. Yeah, yeah.
No, no, but like, but no, but this is also a big, it's actually a bigger move, because most comics, they move there because they weren't, they wanted to get known. You were known. You were moving to basically not get known, you know, yeah, to escape. So that's even bigger, because that's more of a risk, I guess, because you already were established, you know.
And it's, I feel that, I mean, I understand that people want to be famous, and it's important, like, you know, especially for this job, it's like have your base and all that. But at the same time, it's kind of exciting just to like go to a random place and start something new. I mean, and Mexico is not a random place. It's like it's also a market for comedy now, and it's a cool place to be. But
it expands your perspective as well. Like, your perspective grows. You start to realize, like, based in Chile, you were probably like, I have so much Chile-based, Chile-centric material. And then when you make a move like that to a different country in a different hub, all of a sudden you're writing different style.
Francisco knows this. It's like our cultures in Latin America are so different between one country to the other, right, that you change one country and it's like, okay, there's a lot of a set of words that you need to change. There's like also like some things that doesn't happen one or another. You need like, you know, kind of like change your mindset, and that's exciting. That's fun.
And it's good to do that, because I think because it's funny too, because you did it the opposite of like you were like, you also kind of like when you started doing comedy in Chile, you never had to struggle like in a way, like everything, because it was new. So like you right away got
I didn't struggle in that part, but we struggle in like the logistics of it. You know, we struggle in a different way. We didn't struggle in like the being famous stuff or like, you know, having people going to see the shows, but we struggle a lot in like, I don't know, going to venues without, they didn't have mics or like they didn't care about like the setting or like they just like thought that you were going to just scream in a corner or I don't know. It was a lot of shitty experiences. But it was more where you, or like a lot of people stole money from us, like a lot of like fake managers and things. It was more like struggle of the logistics than the,
like the Wild West.
Exactly, man. Like, I mean, that happened a lot till today. There's a lot of like scams and like, I don't know, they put, not anymore because of the internet, but like, I remember like they used to put, I don't know, they pay for, I don't know, a bunch of billboards with like, oh, he's coming to town, and you were never coming. They just like, you know, get your money, and they never even call you to tell you you're coming.
They would put billboards. It's like, if Fabrizio moved to this town,
like, I don't know what it means move. You know, I don't know the word. So stop talking about moving.
But you did like a coming to America thing, because like it's kind of like in Coming to America where like Eddie Murphy goes to New York to, you know, to struggle because he's, and you did kind of the same thing, because you could have stayed in Chile and be, you know, chill over there because, you know, everybody knew you and stuff like that, but you force yourself to go to Mexico to kind of like, well, I'm going to struggle, and then US too, you know?
Yeah. I mean, once again, it's like, there was a lot of struggle also like before that for different reasons, and like just because I want my family or anyone that I knew was connected to TV, you know, so it was like also like getting into like the media and writing for newspapers, all that was like a weird, but I was really young, so it wasn't like a struggle, it was a lot of fun. But then I see it differently now. It's like, okay, yeah, I was working and it was like not having weekends and like we were just doing this, you know, like and then we started on cable, and that make like the thing also very smooth, like a smooth transition from having like this level of fame to this level of fame to this level of fame. It was like overnight, so that was also like very, I think it was like a healthier way to be famous,
right? To become famous. That makes a lot of sense, man. That's really good. That's a great answer.
Yeah.
Are you happy now?
Yes, finally. Finally, we got you to move because you were
extremely happy, buddy.
If you ever want to ask Fabrizio to help you move, he's going to be like,
let me explain you this. Like, when your body transcends your soul.
What do you mean? Well, let's talk about soul.
Let me move.
No, I need help with my couch.
Yeah, no. Get you
emotional.
What is a
couch?
You want me to move you?
Well, let me ask. I got the second question, which I'm going to ask you. Where? Oh man, I had it right here. Now there it is. Sorry about it. The second question we have is like, okay, what was the most fun trip? Again, going
trip. Traveling. Yeah, not drugs, not mushroom trip. Yeah,
I'm not tripping, I'm falling, but just
okay. So I was walking.
No, wait, let me finish the question.
Sorry. Yeah.
Now, so what was the most fun trip that you did as a kid with your family for like holidays or you know, like anything? Like, what's the most fun trip that you did?
My dad was obsessed with driving, and like he liked to drive a lot and like visit like a lot of places in a short amount of time. So we did a trip from Santiago. I don't know if you guys have the map in your mind, but like you have Santiago here. And then you have all the way across the desert and get all the way to Peru. And doing that trip driving is at least 10 days.
Oh, my God.
So we did it in a car. I mean, back and forth, of course. You know, it's like.
And it's a five-person family. There and then come back. You have two brothers, right?
But at the time, it was just one.
Okay.
All now right. I have a younger sister, but she was like, 10 years later than that. And we went there with my brother, my mom, my dad, and it was the best. It was so much fun. And it was the first time I was outside the country. So I remember like going to a supermarket in Peru and be like, wow, another,
How old were you?
I was maybe 10, 11, or I don't know. I have memories of being like the most fun thing I ever done because it was just like,
wow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, also my dad, it's kind of like a freak on traveling. He's like, oh, there's this little town that have one thing that no one cares, but I'm going to go there. And
so that's a very bad thing.
Yeah. Our trip was like a lot of going to like small towns and, you know, see things that it was like, my mom was like, really? We took this deep for this shit?
That's fair. That's great because I thought initially when you said you're going to traverse a desert for 10 days, like, to most other cultures, that sounds almost insane. And now you followed it up with, it was fun. It was the most fun I've ever had.
Well, also the desert is amazing. Like that, especially that one. It's like, it changed so much. Like the colors of this. I mean, I remember like.
Well, also they were driving, JJ. It wasn't like the Egyptians.
We were
Exodus,
not in,
you
know? Well, in camels.
I double down. There's nobody in Australia who looks forward to driving across their great sandy desert. There's nobody in Canada.
Also, this is the most arid desert in the world. That this is like the place with less water in the air on the planet. I mean, right. I remember clearly talking and feeling right away like you'd get dry.
Oh wow.
So you have to be drinking water all the time. I mean,
also you were in the roof of the car, so that's why
I was also pushing the car, so
everybody's
that
strapped.
Make it more fun. I mean, well, that's fun. We had a lot of fun,
and it's fun that you mentioned that whole thing about like going to a new country and seeing like the supermarket, because that happened to me the first, like my first trip that I, because my dad also used to love to travel around Venezuela, but when we went to the first time I went to came to the U.S., we went to Disneyland, and but we went. I remember going to the supermarket, and also first of all going like, wow, like there's so much shit here, yeah. You know, and also even the milk. I remember the milk because over there in Venezuela, the milk. I mean, everybody kind of buys the powder milk. But over here, okay. It's like that, the gallon of like whole milk. And but I remember drinking it. I was like, oh, this is so good, man. It's like, you know, I remember the same thing with like going into just even being in
Because I feel like supermarkets now, they look the same all over the world. But
yeah,
you know, have like the same kind of the same set of products. But it used to be amazing because even like you cross to Peru and like the same beer have a different name. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, it's the same logo, but have a different name. What is this? And you're as a kid, he's like, this is like traveling to another dimension.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all three of us are immigrants here. So I think we all agree. Like, because I remember that as a kid too, coming to America, and everything was like a playground. You know, every shop you were in, everything, because it felt so different.
From
Canada. So yeah, 100%. I'm with you on that one. All right, buddy. We got here's a little bit of personal info. If you're ready to share this one with you, our third question. It is simply, do you have an essential item, or it can be sentimental? Is there an item that you always take with you on the road? you know, it could be superstitious, anything. But if you're, say you're leaving for a gig or you're leaving for a weekend away or something, is there something you always have to have with you?
Or an essential item too.
To be honest, not really. I have to say that when I have gigs that I feel that they're more important, I have like one black shirt that I bring with me. Mm-hmm. But it's not even like a big deal. It's just like a stupid thing that is like, okay, I'm just going to bring this black shirt. Sometimes I don't even wear that shirt. But it's like
your lucky shirt.
To bringing that, that lucky shirt with me. And it's the one that I use in that show in Vigna.
Oh,
so it's like,
okay.
It's like, and also like it fits me well. I feel like when I don't find anything to wear, it's like, you know like
you're going to look good on that one.
Okay. It's a safe shirt.
So it's like where superstition meets convenience and quality, basically.
Exactly.
But do you wear the same one or do you have or is it just a black shirt or is like this is the black? Because
it's the black shirt. I have like a little thing in the neck. I mean, it's I don't even remember where I got it, but like. Yeah, when I got that gig in Viña del Mar, I went for clothes and I was like, oh, this black shirt is kind of like standard, but at the same time, a little slightly cooler, you know? And I like that.
So what happened if that black shirt, when that black shirt dies, what are you going to do?
I'm going to quit. I'm just going to like stop doing this, you know? Why? Why I'll keep going without my shirt?
By the way, I see that you're wearing some. Is that the black shirt? Is this you? Nervous?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. This is.
I thought you were wearing
the Kanye West shirt.
It's got it going all right. And can I just ask then, when you're on the road and stuff? I mean, I think you know your set, you know your show now. But do you travel with a joke book as well?
Yeah,
are you a joke book guy?
I'm a joke book guy, and I like to have it. I mean, I use my phone too, but I feel. Way better when it's like, I'm gonna write my joke.
When it's written down, yeah, it feels better, doesn't it?
I have it here, actually. I got a new one, like this one. And I like it because I have like this little thing, because you always get destroyed in your pocket. You know, at some point, it's always like a mess.
Yeah.
But I like this one. I like the one you can put a pen in them. You know, mm-hmm, I always look for those. I like to have my little, make me feel like a professional, you know? Like,
Job.
Yeah, I think writing, I mean, I think the whole phone thing, like I've gotten sometimes used to writing more on the phone or the computer, but when you write something, it does feel better, I think, I think if I do write, I get more creative.
Yeah, you stumble onto something, don't you? If when you handwrite it, you can stumble onto a word or something nuanced, whereas when you type it into your phone, you formulate an accurate sentence first, don't you? Like here's
and also you're more concentrated. Like there's like I think the writing is like it's just the writing with the phone or the computer. Other shit pops up, and then you're not really concentrated on that.
Also even like when I take notes in my phone, I use the notes for everything, so it's like. Half of a joke, a number that I don't remember what I put there. You know, like the name of a doctor that I have to see, and then a joke. So it's just a mess. Yeah. I'd rather have this and be like, okay, here's the joke.
That's true. Yeah,
man.
All right, that's a good answer. You get the black shirt. Let's see. Well, hopefully you bring that black shirt when we go to DC.
I will.
So you guys are in DC together?
Yeah, we're going to be there on April 9 and 10. We're going to be performing there at the Arlington Draft House.
Amazing.
So when I go there, get your tickets at the Arlington Draft House. Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be my first time doing like a long set, you know, since the whole pandemic started. So I'm definitely going to bring my my joke book.
And you're going to bring all your stuff.
You can use my black shirt. I know where you're going. You can use my black shirt that night.
Everything superstitious you can muster for that first gig after a pandemic.
Yeah, man. All right. Next question we got. It's like, who has been the most interesting person that you have met while traveling?
Besides me.
Well, JJ was the number one. Traveling, the most interesting person I met traveling. Well, I mean, I just have memories of talking with. Oh, sorry, I interrupt you. I don't know if my internet is cutting me out. But okay, I'm back. So I just remember like doing a lot of gigs in different cities and hanging out late. I mean, this is like, I don't know, 10 years ago. I'm talking with a lot of homeless people.
And
I just, I used to have that thing, especially like, once again,
it's in
like,
Chile, right?
Yeah. I don't talk with like American homeless. It's a very different kind of homeless. They don't talk to you. They talk with the wall.
So, and that's interesting because like, right. I mean, when I go to Venezuela, like, or even like, I don't see that many homeless people. I mean, there's a lot of poor people, but like,
I think we talked about this before. It's like, yeah, the homeless person in Latin America is mostly because of poverty. Here is a mix of drugs.
Everything, yeah.
I don't know, like lifestyle and poverty, you know, in the same basket. So you made a lot of like articulate homeless people, you know, people you can sit down and talk for an hour, or like they and I have memories of that. Also, like talking with like a lot of cab drivers, or like, I don't know, talking with like a lot of people who recognize me from TV, and then I just was like, you know what, I'm drunk, I'm in this town that I don't know anyone. I'm just gonna like try to have a conversation. And I remember having meaningful conversation and thinking like, oh, that's so great that I am a comic, you know, because I have the chance to connect with this guy who in any other scenario will never share anything. So I have like good memories of doing that. And maybe those are like the most meaningful conversations I have on the road. I never met anyone like, I met my wife on the road, but like I never met.
Okay.
So like homeless people.
Maybe she should have been
my wife. You know, it's like,
she's gonna love hearing this. She's
Francisco, you know Christina, but you don't know how when I met her, she was living in the streets. She was a homeless woman.
Okay, wow, that's great. I mean, it's funny. It's like, who's the most interesting person you meet on the road? Homeless people. Oh yeah, and my wife.
Oh yeah.
The mother of my child. Yeah.
But homeless people are thinking more interesting. No. I met Christina. I'm not sure if it was on the road, I have to say, because he was in a weird context, but kind of.
No, but you were traveling when you met her?
I was traveling, but I was not doing comedy. I was traveling for a film festival.
Oh, okay. Well, it doesn't have to be like while you were working. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. And I think Christina and homeless people.
So if Christina would have been a homeless, it would have been like a match made.
A match made in heaven. Yeah, exactly.
Then she'd be number one.
She's my number one.
It's funny because I also talk to like sometimes like people that are like, I do like enjoy that too, talking to people that are like, you know, because you do realize that sometimes it's like we're so equal. Like, what's so different between that person and me? It's like just like a couple of things. But like sometimes person are very like smarter than you, or like you're like, wow, this person, like, why? Sometimes you ask yourself,
especially,
why is this person?
Especially like for us, we're comics. That is like it's not like a fancy, it shouldn't be a fancy job. It's just like an entertainer in the middle of, you know, like a drunk
It's a working class job, really.
It's a working class job, and it's being elevated, and of course there's like there's an artistic side of it, but the other side is also like you're in a plane with like your luggage, and you go to work, and you know, it's like you're going to
you check yourself on the hotel. You gotta even it's very it's like you're like a salesman in the 50s that would sell dictionaries.
And we're like, or material or jokes, but at the same time, we're like just a guy with a luggage, you know, sitting waiting for the bus to the shuttle to get into the airport, you know?
Yeah.
You know how, so this is the first place I moved to that had those bucket shows where they make aspiring comedians all put their names in a bucket.
Yeah.
Right? Like that doesn't exist in Britain. I don't know where it's popping up now or whatever, but this is Hollywood. I was doing Domerera's show at the Laugh Factory, and Domerera's show is on after this bucket night. So it was my first time seeing the bucket night, seeing them pull the names out of all these waiting comedians, which hurt my heart a little bit because I think it's unfair to make young aspiring comedians stand around hoping to have their name drawn. But on top of that, when they drew the names, two of them were homeless people, quite clearly, who and they just got up and they just wanted to rant about the government and start screaming. oh, and you're supposed to keep it relatively clean at these. And so they're start screaming about stuff. They're getting dragged off stage, but you know, but it's you know, everybody's name, one name in the bucket. They've all got a chance, but I couldn't believe it. And I think that happens a lot in Hollywood, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like, well, when I started comedy store. Yeah. I mean, I remember when I started doing open mics, comedy store and improv and Laugh Factory. Yeah. There was like half people that were like there to, because they wanted
to build a career and
to build a career. And then the half who were like homeless and crazy people who just wanted to be, cause you know, obviously you do need to listen to them because they're there and they wanted to talk, but they were just there. You could tell that they were not there for comedy.
They were not building a set for Conan.
There's still the fact that their name got pulled out of a bucket is the biggest victory that they've had in a while.
Well, I've run into homeless people like in LA where I know them from like the comedy store, you know, and they're like asking for change, you know, and I'm like, hey, what's up? You know,
in the comedy world, I have to say there's a lot of like romanticizing the having a shitty life, you know. There's a lot of like, I live in my car and I live in the floor and I'm eating trash because I love comedy and it's like there's no need for that, man. Like, it's fine if you have a nice place to live or like even decent, you know. But they like the idea of like, I'm a homeless dude.
Well, that's the thing that I struggle when I first moved here, and like, because I had a full time job and I was like, I need this because I don't want to be poor and like doing comedy, like if it's not paying. And then, but I would struggle. It's like, do I have to be like, because I would see other guys like, like they didn't have any money or I would slip in the car.
Oh, Francisco's like, not legit. He's taking showers.
Yeah.
It's not.
And then I realized that's just stupid. Yeah, I saw Francisco's act. He didn't have any jokes about being poor and hating his day job.
Or hating his family. That's another one too. Like, oh, you have to have a bad childhood where something really dramatic happened, and I'm like, no, my parents were cool. You know,
one of
my
favorite things on earth, and I have to say, I love Marc Maron and his podcast, and I love the idea of like, you know, going deeper into comedy. I love that concept. I think it's great, and I love podcasts like that. But my favorite episode of that podcast is when Jerry Seinfeld is on it, and Marc Maron tried to do his thing of like, so what's the trauma behind your jokes? And Jerry's like, nothing. He's like, but you hate something. It must be something, because it's like, no, not really. Nope. No, I have a happy life. I love my life. This is just entertainment. I love to do this. And he destroyed the whole like thing about how to be miserable or like everything that is like about like, you know, having a horrible life in comedy. And of course, Seinfeld can do that because he's a multimillionaire. But at the same time, it was funny to see how Marc Maron need this like, suffering, comedy come from suffering, and this other dude, maybe one of the most successful or the most successful comic in the world, was like, nope, not really.
It comes from observation. I make some observations, I'm perfectly fine. Have you ever noticed cats and dogs? And
what's the problem with that? And it's people are making lines to waiting for me outside of this apartment, you know.
Well, like, I think it's like because people see the history of people that became famous and they go like, oh, it has to be that way, but things evolve, you know. And
I was thinking that too, Francisco. I think that's been an important part of the evolution of comedy, hasn't it? That people are a little, comedians can be a bit happier now than they used to be. You used to have to be downtrodden, because we also used to have to rally against commercialism and advertising. If you remember Bill Hicks in the 80s, like that was such a big platform. If you came up 80s, 90s, and even into the 2000s when I started, it was anti, you know, that the whole footprint that Bill Hicks had left was still there. Like, you know, if you're in advertising, kill yourself and fuck that and all that. And now fast forward to 2021, everybody's cutting for advertising breaks. Comics are holding up products on their podcasts and advertising. I mean, so Bill Hicks be rolling over in his grave. So so we evolve, don't we?
I think that the 90s had this like long hangover. And it was like 10 years of like, you know, still having the same mindset of the 90s was, you know, especially for comedy. And I mean, every comic has his time. And I think now it's time for, having a different life. And you can be a comic without being famous in the whole planet and be super successful and be happy.
Yeah. And also what happened too is also like the way that you look as a comic too was a thing. Like I would struggle because I would like, oh, I can't dress well. I have to like look like like, yeah, like I didn't take a shower or something to be respect. I mean, a lot of mostly, well, I think more women even struggle with that because like, oh, they have to like look, you know, like they don't dress up just so they can be accepted. And that's so dumb. It's like, it's like just wear whatever you, you know, wear what makes you, you know, who makes you, you know what I mean? Yeah, comfortable, you know. And it doesn't matter. It's about the comedy. It's not about why you look, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
We're not Liberace.
We evolve. We all evolve. Stop stop wanting us to be downtrodden. We're evolving here. This brings us to our next question, big guy. This is always a fun one. What is a tradition or custom that you've encountered in your travels that you would love to introduce to America or Chile?
Oh, okay.
Or and Chile.
Yeah.
I have to be
something I learn on the road or traveling, and then I want to implement that in this other country.
Yeah, like a thing that people do in, you know, in Argentina that you like to bring back to Chile or to America or.
Well,
or
something both. That it should be global is turning right on red lights. You know, something happened here in LA. I think that should be. Like, if there's, like, a global government controlling the planet, the deep state of the universe, I mean, or something like that, that should be, like, the first move. I think we should push that agenda more than anything.
But in Chile, they don't do it?
They don't do it. So you're, like, there, and there's a red, like, I feel so dumb now because I already experienced the other side. I already live in LA, so I know what it's, like, the pleasure of turning in red lights. And now I go there, and I'm, like, what the fuck? I mean, there's nothing going on. And I'm just there. I don't know. I feel it's a great idea. And I think it's the best thing about LA.
That's one of the best answers we've had for this question before. That's a very good one. Because I have felt that too in other countries and stuff when you're just sitting there, especially after gigs, especially considering how late it is for a lot of us after a gig. And there has been, I'm trying to think of the country now, but I was in like a promoter's car at like 2 a.m. on our way back from the gig or whatever. It's 2 a.m. We're sitting at a red light with a blinker on. And I'm like, why don't we turn? He's like, oh, it's illegal. It's illegal to turn here. And I'm like, holy shit.
Wow. So, well, Venezuela never struggles with that because you don't stop at any red light. Like, you got to go or you're going to get robbed, literally.
Oh,
like,
really?
Yeah, like if it's 2 a.m. and you're waiting there like an asshole. No, you make it, you basically do it like a stop. You're like, what? And then go.
You make a stop sign.
Yeah, right. Stop. But also New York, you know, New York, because also even this in the within states, I know, like, I don't know if New York still does it or not, but I remember like when it first, the times that I drove to New York, that in New York you couldn't turn right on red, you know.
I know, so I think you can. I was there, I was there a couple months ago, and I remember
now you
that.
Can.
Yeah. No, everywhere.
Oh,
everywhere.
Okay.
I think in some parts of it, I mean, it's not in Manhattan. I think in Manhattan you have to stay in the red light.
So you would want that to bring to Chile.
I will bring that everywhere.
I think that's everywhere. A great idea.
Everywhere.
And anything that you want to bring from somewhere to America?
I was thinking about that. I was trying to think about something from Chile that I would love to bring
to
America.
Or another country.
From a trip that I learned something cool. Well, I love the things in especially in Argentina, that everything starts so late that you can have a show, a legit show. I mean, you open the door at 1 a.m. in the morning in a theater and it's like everyone is there. And this is cool. So there's shows like, I don't know, at 7, then at 9, then at 11, then there's one at 1. So that will be nice to have shows that are like, you know, late. So you can just jump from one another and even get that last piece of the cake. Really late. And that was nice about Argentina. I like that.
It's almost like having a festival on the go.
Every weekend.
Yeah. I agree with that too. Like it always baffles me that in America, a lot of times where I guess I speak for Hollywood now of like when we go to these clubs, it's the shows are all just one night. It's like happening the whole night. There's no breaks or anything. They're cycling comedians through. And then to Fabrizio's point, if it was structured and had there's a 7 o'clock show, a 9 o'clock show, an 11 o'clock show, and a 1 o'clock show, I think that creates a fun community vibe.
Yeah. That's funny. Well, another thing that also when I first moved to LA was weird is like there's no like late night like New York or like Miami or something like that. And I was used to that because I grew up in the East Coast. And when you moved here, is like, oh, everything closes at 2 and everything's done at, you know, and it was like, to me, that was so weird because I thought LA was like, oh, one of the biggest cities in the world. Like, you know, it's going to be like Barcelona or like stuff like that, like till late. And then no. But so somebody told me that it was something had to do with like, what is that called? Like during the Prohibition era or something like that. Like,
right.
I think that's one of the reasons that it stopped. That everybody closed at 2 and then they kept that way, you know.
Well,
I don't remember.
Prohibition is not there anymore, guys. You guys,
no, I know.
Evolve. We talk about this evolution.
But I'm with you too, Francisco, because I remember when I first moved here and
because how is it in London, JJ? Is it going too late?
We have there was a late show in London, but and there is late shows. I'm not sure if the Comedy Store.
What about clubbing? Like clubbing, like if people go to club, do they last till like 5 in the morning?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All through. I mean, that's a clubbing country, isn't it? That's the country of Moby and Fatboy Slim and DJ. When in the 90s, when everybody in North America wanted to learn acoustic guitar, I think everybody in Britain was trying to learn turntables and stuff. So yes, they party all night. I think they just got their underground. Their trains go all night now, too. Which is, it's about time. So yeah, you can generally find these late night venues. But I found the Comedy Store was open till 2 in the morning when I first moved here. And it doesn't have an audience until 2. It had like 8 people at most, like strung around, a couple homeless people there, and then people doing their jokes. So it's different. Nobody's thought to market a whole like late night beer drinking thing, but maybe
it can't do it. New York does it.
Yeah, New York does it. It's how weird how LA is kind of like a retirement place, you know? It's kind of like, okay, we're old.
We've all come here to further our careers, and yet it has a retirement vibe to it.
We come here to talk more to homeless people.
they need people to talk with them.
To learn from them.
Yeah. Most of the homeless people just look at us when we walk by going, your time will come. we're saving a spot over here for you, pal.
I think a lot of people like the homeless people, they looked at us and go like, who's the homeless now?
I see it when I'm walking. I don't live far from Hollywood Boulevard, Fabrizio, and there is a homeless encampment, and I do feel like when I exit my apartment and walk past it, I do feel like they're going, that guy, really? That guy's doing okay.
Then they go like, hey, you're gonna be next. What?
Nothing. We've already got your bike tires, buddy. We're coming back for the rest of you.
Oh man. All right, last question we got for you. It's when traveling, have you ever felt that your life was at risk? Or that you were gonna die, or you know, or get injured or something?
The only time, but it was kind of dumb. It was like an experience mostly. Like in 2010, I saved some money and I was like, I'm gonna go to New York. I was in Chile, and I was 20, and I was like, you know what? I have finally some money from my job. I'm just gonna go to New York for the first time. So it went by
myself.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, and then I talked with a friend, and he was like, oh yeah, I want to go too. And he was like, but I'll be there like 2 weeks later than you. So I was like, okay, 2 weeks by myself, then my friend is coming and we'll, you know. So the first 2 weeks when I was by myself, I was like kind of like confused about a lot of things, you know, like I was very nervous with my English. I didn't know what to do. So I was still very uncomfortable, you know, and I didn't know, I mean, what is like a legit place to stay, what is better than the other. I mean, I was not, you know.
You didn't have a hotel at this point?
Yeah. No, I had one. I had a decent one for like 3 days. My idea was like 3 days. You know, figure it out, and then I'm just gonna find something cheaper.
Oh, got it.
Right.
You know? That was my plan, and I did it, but the problem is like I found a place that it doesn't exist anymore. I mean, it's just like one of those places that pop up and then disappear because they're not legit at all.
Yeah.
But it doesn't exist anymore now or back then?
No. I went there, I got inside. It was a lot of bunk beds. It was like jail. Like it was exactly like jail.
Oh, was it like a hostel?
It was a hostel, but it was not. I mean, I know how a hostel looked like. This is not a hostel. This is like they put a hostel in like an an empty building, you know?
Right.
Wow.
So everything was dirty. It was disgusting. Like, you see the pillows. I was like, I don't want to sleep here, you know?
So that was the place that you moved after the 3 days?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I got there and I was like, okay, I'm going to spend one night maybe here. I don't want to like keep looking. So I'm just going to spend one night. I just, you know, I was young. I didn't care that much, but I was like, okay, I'm doing this. And then in the middle of the night, I heard this fight. And the problem was, once again, my English was not great. So I didn't know if it was really bad. It was just like two friends discussing. I don't know, you know?
Right.
So also, like, I was coming from a lot of like bad information about like New York. I mean, not New York, but like, you know, shootings and stuff in America. So you're like, you paranoid hit. Yeah. And you're like, what's going to happen here? You know, I don't know.
Where was it, by the way, in New York? Where was this? In what part?
I think it was near Harlem. It was not Harlem, but it was near Harlem. And it was like,
was it really close to the train tracks?
It was really like, I mean, must be 230, you know, like really number.
That's
never
a long
good
train drive.
That's never good.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't know what's gonna happen. I don't know if this is like, I also my brain was debating like, I'm scared for real or I'm just ignorant, you know? Yeah. It's like, I don't know if this is like a real problem. And that night I decided like, you know what? I'm just going to walk all night. I'm not going to stay here.
Wow.
Shit.
Oh, right.
So just walk all night. I have a lot of fun walking all night. I see like a lot of crazy people back on the street and I have like my luggage that it was not a lot. So I just like walk around. I walk to like Central Park from there. I just like sit there, wait for like the things to open. I get a coffee and
wait a second. Hold on.
I'm with him. I agree. I can see him.
No, but I this sounds vaguely familiar. Is this a plot to Home Alone 2?
So this is the part I didn't tell you. I met this woman that loved dope, and she's like, so I didn't know where to go, so I went to the Trump Tower and I was trying to check in, and this guy with the blonde hair said like, that's the lobby.
Wait a second, so you walked all night until obviously morning, and then you went, and then what'd you do?
Then I Googled another place and I went. It was actually called Central Park West Hostel. And it was nice. It just had like this silly rule. So you had to be there before 10 or some shit like that. And it was like annoying. But beside that, it was nice. It was cheap. And then I went to Jersey for a couple of days. And I knew someone from the internet back then. Oh. And so I hung out with this girl and I was like, oh, this is fun.
Oh, it was like a match.com thing?
No. She was in Chile, like doing a mayor or something, and she met me online and she wrote something about me, and then we start talking. But I mean, still a nice friend.
A little deadliance.
A little, yeah, it was fun. And actually, like, then I met her parents and all that in Jersey. Yeah. And once again, my English was not great, so it was super weird. And then we got married that the same day.
That accelerated quickly.
And I was like, I'm not ready for this, so I walk all night again.
Your thing was to just, every time you got in trouble, you just walked all night.
Walk all night.
It's good to have that as a backup game plan. I have found, too, that in America, they do sneak in sometimes when you're looking for a hotel on like hotels.com or Hotwire or whatever you use, bookings.com. There are some places that qualify themselves as hotels somehow. And then because it happened to me in San Diego and in New York, where I showed up for a hotel that I remember thinking, because I know what Fabrizio is talking about. Like, if you stay in a nice hotel for the first couple of nights, and often in my case, that's because I do a gig and they get me a nice hotel. And I use that time to get the lay of the land. And then I get a shitty hotel to balance the nights off until I get until I'm gigging again on like Thursday or whatever. And I get a nice hotel back. But I know what you're talking about, man. Sometimes in America, sometimes if you book a hotel quickly, like because I got used to it in Europe, you get a hotel when you book a hotel. But in America, you book a hotel and you show up and it's a hostel, if anything.
I remember going to the lobby and there was like this family, like before I heard this other fight, a family there being like crying, being like, we got scammed. Like, this is not the place You know, so yeah, it's that kind of hostel.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've gotten some
people cry.
I mean, for me, like when I got scared in New York was for like traveling, like for doing like college gigs, but like, so I had to like leave, you know, when like, when you're doing this in the beginning, it was like, you didn't get paid that much, or I didn't want to spend the less amount yeah. possible to make the money.
Yeah.
So like, obviously we had like the early.
That's how people die.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had like the early, staying with my sister, but I had like the earliest flight, you know, maybe like 5 a.m. So I had to leave like, and I didn't want to take like a cab or, you know, or because it was too expensive. So I'd take the subway, you know, and it was like, yeah, like at 2 or 3 a.m. I remember going to like the station and there was like it was like Ghostbusters. There was nobody. And there was like one guy going like, eh! <You know? laughs> And I was like, and then at that point I'm like, oh shit. And I have my luggage. And then like, and then I get to the, the train station, you know, in the car, and I'm sitting there and I just see like just a guy there like going like looking at me like just like staring at me, and I'm like, and I'm going like, man, as soon as this shit opens I'm fucking just running. And I was like, it was such a fucking like, I was so tired because I didn't go to sleep that night, but I couldn't go, I mean, the whole being
scared, yeah, you get more finally, paranoid.
Yeah, until I finally right. got to the airport and I was like, fuck. But I was like, and I was like, and at that point I'm like, I'm not doing this shit again. I'll pay whatever to take an Uber or a cab. What is this shit? Like, what am I doing?
Money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, man. Sometimes you gotta make a little extra sacrifice. It's hard because, you know, you want to make a profit while you're on the road, but you also, you know, we're not 24 willing to put ourselves through hell all the time.
You want to survive to then spend that money. So it's like, yeah. You need. Yeah. This happened a lot. Like, especially like, I mean, I don't do those things anymore, but I don't care that much about like sleeping in the floor. I've never been like, I need the perfect bed. Well, now more because I have a family. Like when we travel, it's like, yeah, we need to stay in a decent place.
Right.
But when you're young, it's like, stay anywhere.
No, when you're young, it doesn't matter. But when, like now I'm like, I'm not staying at a cheap ass hotel. Not because I want to, it's just because,
yeah,
when you're on the road, especially by yourself, that's where you spend the most time. And like, I don't want to be in a place that I'm like scared some shit's gonna happen or some like.
Also, like, you don't perform well. Then you retire. You feel, you know, like shit. You don't.
Or the place is disgusting. It doesn't have like the places like the sheets are disgusting, or the bathroom is. You know, I and at that point, I'm going like, fuck, I'll pay $40 more, $30 more, but I'll pay to stay in a better place. Because it's not worth it, you know. Like,
I can send you the place that I got in New York.
I think that we'd love to avoid that. I think because I think I told you a couple weeks ago when we interviewed Larry Dean, Francisco. I slept in my car in 2019. I slept in my car recently. My rental car. It was a rental car, but it was.
Where?
So I was touring Britain. And I did a show in Bristol, for anybody who doesn't know, that's like the west of Britain, like the southwest is Bristol. And I was doing a show there and they forgot it was the weekend of Glastonbury Music Festival.
Uh-oh.
And the promoter tells me everything's fine. We got you the hotel and all that. And then not till I was finished my show. So at 11:45 at night.
Oh, no.
At 11:45 at night, the promoter was like, Glastonbury Festival's happening. I was like, yeah, it happens every year. How are you not prepared for this? He goes, well, I can't get any hotels. They were all booked out. And I was exhausted because I had already been on the road for a few days. So I literally went and slept in my car until like, I had a long drive the next day. I slept in my car until about 4 a.m.
Where?
And then get up in Bristol, in the park. In a hotel parking lot in Bristol, just
like the movie No Man's.
Couple hours snooze, and then I was off to Leeds, and then I drove like the 4 hours across country for my next night's gig, and I kind of held them hostage in their own hotel lobby because they were like, "Sir, you can't check in till 10 a.m," and I was like, "Well, I'm just gonna sleep here, legs akimbo until you embarrass yourselves into giving me a room, and then I get in a bit early."
During those points, I mean, because it's funny, like I think we all have that, you know, those things that happens to us while doing shows, and then I always get, don't you always get that thought of like, what am I doing? Like, yeah. It's like, yeah. Fuck. It's like, yeah. Are you fucking kidding me? It's like, I'm sleeping. Like, because I think we all like, I fuck. Like,
yeah, well,
I still remember, the
night that I did sleep in my car, I was thankful for being a 6 foot tall white man, because I was like, this is dangerous for anybody, any young comic who's pursuing a career right now. And if they'd have been like found themselves at this gig and then just be told, if it was a young woman, it depends on your personality type or who you are. But to be saddled with that information at 11:45 at night, like, this job is hard, man. This job is fucking, you know, we have to do a lot of dodgy shit.
I remember this thing very clear, that once, and we were talking about this before, like, the logistics in Chile were not ready when we started. So I booked a show, and it was like, yeah, you're going to go to this town and whatever. I got there, and it was this like dude of probably my age. He was like, yeah, I'm the producer.
Like, that's always a bad sign.
Oh, no. Yeah, I was like, damn it, this is trash. So we did the show, and the show was okay. You know, it wasn't bad. But then it was like, okay, where are we going to the hotel? It's like, no. Just stay in my house. And I was like, okay, so where you live?
No.
It was like, no, I live with my parents. So I was like, whatever. I have fun, I have to say. Like, I was like in this house with these random people, and the mom was so nice, like cooking and doing. But at the same time, yeah, that's, once again, that's not how a show should be.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, even when you start doing shows, like in the beginning of when you do comedy, yeah, you're fine with staying with somebody else in the room. But now you're like, fuck no. Yeah. I want my own room. Like, I don't want to deal with some, like, yeah. That's the thing that happens when you're like young. But like, yeah, I remember too, one time I had to stay at somebody's house, and like, I think I left in the middle of the night because I was like, it was a weird, you know, that's just the thing.
I don't think the situations never leave, but like, they do just pop up out of nowhere sometimes, you know, because I was just thinking, yeah, there's a couple times it happened.
Oh, that was me.
Okay. Oh. Yeah, it happens a couple times on tour. You get a good string of hotels and kind people, and then all of a sudden, because you just remember, in Holland, I did spend one night in Holland in somebody's, because he's like, you stay at mine, and I'm like, fine with it. It's whatever. It's a bridge gig in Holland, and his room was being painted. So there was like plastic tarps up and shit, and an air mattress in the corner of all these I was like, oh, dude, you know, you said I was staying with you, but you didn't say it was going to be a piece of shit room.
No. If somebody ever books me and be like, hey, you're staying in with me, or I'm like, nah, I'm not doing that gig. Like,
this is $1 million.
Well, that's different.
Then you can afford a hotel.
Yeah, then you can afford a hotel.
It's like $1 million, but you have to sleep with me.
Oh, no, that's a different kind of gig.
That's another gig.
That's to book Francisco for those kind of gigs.
By the way, I think Carol Casey says, like, akimbo. Please don't use the word akimbo enough. What's akimbo?
It's a spread. If your leg's akimbo, your legs are spread. Because I was using it to describe the way I lay down in the lobby of the hotel. So I would lay across chairs. You just lay across chairs, legs akimbo, and eventually the concierge will come over and go, we'll get you a room, Mr. Whitehead.
Your room is akimbo, please.
Yes. Please stop being akimbo.
That's too much akimbo for this place.
100%.
Hilarious. Well, that's the last question we had. I mean, want to thank you for coming tonight and sharing the word, sharing us how you, first of all, your experiences during the road and traveling and moving.
Yeah. And we always do ask. You were a fantastic guest for me, Teal. So thanks very much, man. You were high on our list from the start when we started this podcast. We were looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you, guys.
We have been asking everybody one last thing on their way out the door, and it's pretty straightforward, but we were wondering, is there a great piece of travel advice that you would like to pass on to our audience? Is there any kind of travel tip that you would love to give the people listening at home?
Every time you get to the airport, just go to the VIP line. don't go to the normal line. They never ask you. Then you get there and they'll, you can be like, oh, I didn't know. Sorry, I got confused. They still give you your, take your shit and they give you a ticket. I always do that. Every time I go, I just go to the, what's the name of this? It's not the VIP. It's,
First class line.
Even I'm not in first class. I just go there. They don't care.
Right. Right. That's a good tip for sneaking out.
And now that everyone's going to start doing it, I just ruin it.
That is a good tip. Yeah, I think that happens too. Yeah, I think I've done it where I had it, but I think it, yeah, I think people don't, because at that point they're like, look, we need to move the line. So like, they don't want to be like, you go back.
You get to the counter and he's like, okay, you give him like your passport or I don't know, whatever. And they're like, oh, but you're not in first class. He's like, oh, I didn't know. Sorry, got confused. Don't worry. Here's your ticket. There's your luggage. So you can go.
Yeah, nice. That only works for that, not for the VIP lounge.
No, you can't. You can't then go any. I mean, you're still gonna be in the horrible part of the plane.
You can't be on the Admiral's Club with your spread with your legs akimbo.
You can't be like,
get out of here, dude.
Get to the plane and be like, I'm the pilot, and they go like, okay, well.
Oh, sorry. I thought I was a pilot. I'm confused. Yeah, you can't get in.
Multiple tips here. That would be blank your way all the way onto the plane and take off as well.
Well, we want to thank you for coming
and just go wherever you want to go.
Yeah. We want to thank you for coming. Want to also
thank you guys for having me.
If people want to listen to you, you have several podcasts. Hablemos de Comedia, Super Carretera. They're called on Spotify. Also, they can check out your Netflix special, Fabricio Copano. Solo Pienso en Mí, which means I only think about myself in English. And then people can also follow you on social media at Fabricio Copano, right?
That's it. Yeah, everywhere.
And then we're going to be in D.C. if people are listening. We're going to be on D.C. on April 9th and 10th at the Arlington Draft House. So please come check out some live comedy, all social distance. Yeah. So it's going to be safe. And everybody was going to be wearing their masks.
We're
going to
be vaccinated.
Like,
we're going to go full pump with the Pfizer. Sweet Pfizer.
And I'm not yet vaccinated, but I'm also doing show. Anybody Los Angeles based? Anybody Los Angeles based? That wasn't supposed to be a joke, but I'm doing the Venice Underground.
But it was funny. It's like,
What the fact that I said I'm not vaccinated?
Yeah, you're like, I'm not vaccinated, but I'm also doing some shows.
I know. It feels weird. It does feel weird. But yes, I'll be doing the Venice Underground this Friday, April 2nd. So come. I think it'll be socially distanced. It better be, because I haven't had a shot yet. So,
well, it's outside, though, so you'll be fine.
Yeah, it's
right?
Fine. You'll be fine.
It'll be sweet.
Cool, guys. Thank you for having me.
Bring your own mic. No, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Take care, guys.
Thank you guys for listening.
Bye,
cheers, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.